The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today as my guest is Dr. Desmond Serrell, who is a professor in the art department of Benedict College in South Carolina. And so welcome you, Dr. Serrell. And please tell our listeners something of your special interests in the areas of art and teaching.
Well, thank you. I'm so pleased that you invited me to join you today and speak with you, catch up, and talk to your listeners. I have been studying Italian, medieval, and Renaissance art and architecture. And when I think of the amount of time, it's a little bit shocking to me because I was looking at something and had the date 1983, and I realized that it's been well over 40 years that I've been studying Italian medieval and Renaissance art. So I have wide-ranging interests, but my interest primarily is painting, sculpture, and architecture.
And so that covers a great range, of course. And I think your doctoral dissertation was on a Franciscan preacher named Bernardine of Siena, who flourished in the 15th century. And so tell us a little bit about that investigation, the work that you did with regard to his use of art in teaching.
Well, thank you. I was thinking about Bernardino recently, and I just found my dissertation listed. I was in WorldCat checking around, and I saw that it was still listed in some libraries that I have visited before. And I felt that that was a validation that even after all these years, they're keeping it on the shelf. It's not gone away. It's still there available for people. My interest in Bernardino was actually started because I initially wanted to work on Pietro di Giovanni d'Ambrogio, a early 15th century Sienese painter. And I had started my research, and my advisor said, well, you should check with Professor Michel Leclot at the Louvre, because I think he has a student who's also working on that topic. So I wrote him, and he wrote me back and said, yes, my student has advanced in that topic. Thank you for inquiring. So I had to look for a different avenue with Pietro di Giovanni d'Ambrogio. And that was how I got interested in Bernardino, because some of the earliest images of Bernardino were by that painter. And they were so unique and they were so special that I got interested in all the representations of Bernardino. And as I investigated, you know, I found out so many important things about him. And one of the things that I have worked on and that I'm actually going to continue to work on soon is that Bernardino was a plague saint. And he appears in plague banners, primarily in Umbria, in the region of Perugia, but he was very important in terms of 15th century invocations against plague. And since we live in a time in which we are all dealing with similar issues, and it all comes from when Bernardino, before he was actually involved as a Franciscan, when he was a young man, there was an outbreak of plague in Siena, and he locked himself into the hospital with 12 friends, and they took care of all of the sufferers from plague in the hospital. And they did everything. They fed them, they cleaned them, they cared for them to their end, and then buried them in the church. And at the end of 6 weeks, they unlocked the door and he came out. And that's really the beginning of his vocation, because he dedicated himself to service from that moment forward. And it just, everything about Bernardino that you see in art, he's just a very simple person. And his image is simple, but it's so meaningful. And he was so important to so many people that it's the simplicity of his image that attracted people, and his humility.
And so Saint Bernardino is related to a very dramatic time in the church in the early 15th century. And this fact that there would be artists presenting him to various churches and groups who would be, of course, on the one hand, fearful of plague, but on the other hand, the courageous need for the need for courageous people to take care of the sick. That is one of the great challenges, especially in those days when people did not have much medical knowledge. Now, we think in our present time, as you referred to, the COVID problem that we've endured over the past few years, that too has been an occasion for the challenge for the sick people to receive care from those around them. And I've noticed that Pope Francis has, in a number of his addresses, has not only drawn attention to the needs of those people who are afflicted with COVID or other contagious diseases, he is also pays a good deal of attention to the caregivers, to family members, and to those who are in the neighborhood, in the area, and realize that these people in their moments of suffering certainly will be uplifted and strengthened spiritually as well as physically by good caregivers. And so we think of that way in which the artist is reminding us of dramatic periods in past history. Now, you and I met in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Each year there, our listeners may not know, but there's an enormous International Medieval Studies Congress, which goes on for 4 or 5 days. And now, of course, bursting into the internet with various options that we didn't have decades ago. And now we are thinking about the way in which you've given various presentations over the years. And remind me of some of the topics that you addressed at Kalamazoo.
Well, I did present on the gonfalone, on the plague banners, because that was related to my work with Bernardino. And I also have presented on some Dominican topics. I got interested in that from representations of prayer and the 9 ways of prayer outlined by St. Dominic. And so I was looking at those specifically, but I was also looking at the wonderful funerary monument that was created for Dominic, and it references all of those ways of prayer in the representations and the meaning of the different modes of prayer. And then I looked also at Francis, specifically Franciscan images and images of Francis receiving the stigmata, and the references to his legend and how that changed how artists were representing that. I also have had an interest in Brigid of Sweden, Saint Brigitta, and I've given 2 or 3 presentations on Brigitta, and then on women and pious widows in the 14th century, specifically those that were represented in the Spanish chapel in Santa Maria Novella in Florence, and then how their legend fluoresces, that fairly recently, and also on a dress. I worked on costume, on dress, on 14th century dress, 15th century dress, and 16th century dress. So those are some of the kind of wide-ranging topics that I've been working on.
And of course, you've been able to publish in some of these areas, which is great. And so the weaving of life experience into art of a given period in history is always significant for those who want to come into the spirit of a given situation. And so your references to themes of prayer, of course, draw attention to the context in Western Europe, and especially as you've been focusing on Italy, that the celebration of great figures, great leaders, and people who gave wonderful examples, sometimes with the very ordinary folks stepping up and taking on enormously important roles, we are then able to recognize that we are heirs in our generation of significant insights into human life, insights into what it is to live according to a certain standard in our daily life by the examples of those people that some of whom you've mentioned. Now, I can remember when you gave the talk on garments, I think in the 15th century, one of the things that struck me was the way in which the international trade in cities like Venice and Genoa, undoubtedly, and other places, you showed that there is a considerable influence from the Middle East in the way in which these garments have been woven and their design. That was a new topic for me, so I enjoyed that. Now, recently you've been working on a similar development, and that would be something that our listeners would be interested in as well, that you are involved in a special program concerning the religious history of the Middle East and in the early centuries of Christianity. So tell us a little bit about that meeting. And I think it was located in Ohio, but give me some more precision, please.
Oh, well, thank you. It was in at Bradley University, which is in Peoria, and it was under the auspices of the National Endowment for the Humanities. It was a summer institute. The directors, co-directors were Dr. Jason Zaborowski, and he is in the Department of Religious Studies at Bradley University, and Dr. Pietranella Van Dorn Harder. And Dr. Van Dorn Harder teaches at Wake Forest in North Carolina, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and she also teaches in religious studies. And so she came with the rest of the participants to Peoria, and we were there for 3 weeks together. So that the Institute started out with an introduction to the development of Middle Eastern Christianity, the very first divisions in Orthodoxy and Byzantine church. And we looked at how the early Christians in the Middle East were viewing their own piety and how they also looked at the piety of others. So it did include reflections from scholars who looked at the Quran in comparison to Christian writing. We looked also at, you know, we advanced through time into later time periods where we were also looking at how medieval Christianity responded, Middle Eastern Christianity responded during the important rise of Islam in that area. And we ended our 3 weeks by focusing specifically on the Coptic religion and the continuing and important presence of Coptic Christianity in Egypt and in the region of Ethiopia and Sudan.
And so the heroic life of these early Christians in Egypt indeed has been inspiring to many of us. And of course, we have recognized that over the past centuries, they've been tenacious in maintaining their faith in the context of sometimes very unfavorable situations and great difficulties. And so we are glad to have that focus in the work that you did this past summer so that there could be an appreciation of how people have used art. And in your case, you've been studying the way in which the ancient churches in Egypt and related areas have indeed significant treasures, which are very little known. So tell us a little bit about some of the churches and monasteries that you have been studying in terms of this recent research.
Well, thank you. I created an online course, and two of the resources that I used were based in the American Research Center in Egypt. Their extensive research, while we would think they would focus mainly on ancient Egyptian art, their focus is actually wide-ranging and throughout all of Egyptian history. And they were funded to two important projects, one for the tour of the Monastery of St. Anthony. And they participated in a conservation and restoration of the paintings there. And they have an excellent online guide and overview that you can actually go into the monastery, stop through this virtual tour, stop and look at individual paintings and understand the meaning and how a pilgrim would actually approach it. And that was the context that I was interested in, was how a pilgrim would be affected by visiting these various sites.
Now, the Monastery of St. Anthony, it was one I did not know about. I mean, I've gone to the famous monastery at Mount Sinai and so on, but tell us the location of this Monastery of St. Anthony was south of Suez, and now that it's available, as it were, on the internet, it would be of interest for me to learn a little bit about that, the background and the history that prepared for this set of paintings in the monastery.
Yeah, the paintings go back to the 6th to 7th century. And because the Coptic belief and religion it exists from the very earliest period of Christianity, from the first century, the Apostle Mark is believed to be the founder of Coptic belief. And so they credit St. Mark as their founder. St. Ananias is their first church leader, their first bishop or pope. And so that goes back to the Acts of the Apostles, if you're thinking about the New Testament. And so their relationship to the development of Christianity is fundamental. And I think that's why we were drawn to that study. So the Saint Anthony, the paintings are from the 6th to 7th century. Those are so much earlier that they're preserved than other sites. There are very few other collections of paintings that would be preserved in their entirety in the site from that time period. So they represent what people were believing at that time and what was drawing them at that moment in their piety, how they were experiencing it through those images.
And so the wider context of paintings should be set, I think, within the Middle Eastern traditions, where a painting is a way in which a community of the faithful are to see through the painting into the reality of God and of the saints that are being commemorated. And so when we come into a Byzantine church, the iconostasis separating the area of the altar from the nave of the church where the congregation gathers, that area, of course, is covered with paintings, as are the dome of the church and the walls in churches that are well known, especially in for me, the ones in Greece would represent another group of early Christians, of communities that have survived over the centuries and have preserved the past in many ways, but through their art in a very special way. Now, so there's an importance to art in terms of the spirituality that people are seeking. The relationship with God then is the fundamental reason for people to make pilgrimage and sometimes to rather remote places. So as you mentioned about this monastery of St. Anthony, certainly it took a considerable time and effort for people to make a pilgrimage there from other parts of Egypt. So do you have any ways of drawing attention to the effect that these paintings would have had on the pilgrims as well as on the monks?
Thank you. I was looking also as part of the kind of research that I've been recently doing, at how women experience mysticism. And I became very interested in the story of Saint Thecla, little known, I think, in the West, but she's such an important early Christian saint, and she's so important for the Orthodox Church, especially for the Coptic Church. And I was struck by how important visitation in that time period was, and also the importance of relics and pilgrimage. And I think today we take for granted that, as you say, on the internet, we can go anywhere and look at anything at just whenever we want to. But it was a great sacrifice, and it was a penance for people to go in those days.
Now, the way in which the saints are linking the community to the past would draw attention ultimately to the New Testament text, as you have mentioned, and then to very early traditions, such as the stories about the heroes and heroines who left a deep impression on the people of faith. And so now you've incorporated this work into a course, and you indicated that that course could be tapped in by people who they have to register at Benedict College, or how is this idea of the internet availability of these materials to be explored?
Well, for my project for the Institute, I created a course on Canvas. That's our learning management system, and a syllabus, and particularly modules on Coptic art, since I had never had access to any. So I created learning modules on Coptic art as an introduction, just an overview and introduction. And the focus of the course was to be on piety and pilgrimage. So of course it starts in the early Christian period into the Byzantine period. It does include some Islamic art and then the Coptic art. And so it hasn't been offered yet at Benedict, but perhaps it will be in the future.
But there is access available then for people who would like to see picture the paintings in the St. Anthony Monastery, for example?
Oh, yes. Through the American Research Center in Egypt, their website. Oh, yeah. That's where you can, if you go to arce.org, mm-hmm. that's their website. And through that, they have an archive of the photographs that were made during the restoration, but they also have that wonderful virtual visit and gallery tour that you can tour the entire monastery, stop and look at all the paintings, and it's an incredible resource.
And so the work that you've done certainly draws our attention to an important area of Christian art that that few of us have had access to, we might say, and I am certainly pleased that you have been able to point us to the ways in which ordinary folks like us can explore some of these great works that are certainly treasures that could be appreciated much more deeply when we get to know something of the life story of these communities. And so the Coptic Church, of course, has drawn attention to the way in which Africa became, from early times, one of the great centers of Christianity. And so certainly Alexandria with St. Mark, we have the way in which, as you have said, we can link the story of Egypt to the Acts of the Apostles and to the life of the early church. So I think that your work, Dr. Searle, is very challenging, and I thank you very much for joining me today for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews. And our listeners, be with us again next Sunday at 11 o'clock. Thank you very much, Dr. Searle.
Thank you. So good to see you. Thank you, Jay.